City Radio in your city. Cambridge 105.
It's 25 minutes to 6. It's Cambridge 105. So I was saying earlier, when I'm sitting in for Julian on this show, I like to try and get some live music in because of such a an interest in the new music generator show. We just can't get everybody into the studio. So what we did was we invited John Harper in today because we played a track from him. I played a track from him a couple of weeks ago on the show, and he got in touch with me about a month or so ago now, I think, and asked if he could come in and play a session. And here he is. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm very well.
Cool.
Thank you for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you promised me interesting stories. So
I don't remember that.
You've got to live up to this. But just a backstory as to who you are. You're an acoustic singer songwriter.
Mm-hmm, yep.
You perform solo stuff, or you just started doing solo stuff.
Yeah.
You're also in a band,
mm-hmm.
Smoking Joes.
Yeah, that's right.
And you're 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you wrote to me, you said I'm soon to quit my job. Have you quit your job now?
I have, actually. I finished when was it? Last week, I think it was. Maybe the week before. It's all going so fast now.
Okay.
It's about 2 weeks ago now, yeah. And haven't looked back since. I'm very happy so far.
All right. Well, it's only been 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Only been 2 weeks. So I'll give another two more.
What were you doing?
I was working as a research scientist for Cambridge Applied Physics.
Okay.
And now I'm playing music, and I'm starting up my own project on the side.
So, okay, all right. Yeah. So music was always something that you wanted to do as a profession, I guess.
It's something I always avoided wanting to do. I just figured it's a silly thing to try out, but I figured, yeah, it might be some fun to try it for a while. So,
okay. Yeah. So what was the reason behind giving up the job? Why did you decide that you were going to take the plunge and have a go at it? What changed your mind?
That's a really good question. I'm still not too sure, to be honest.
You're having a bad day at the time.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. No, I don't know. I'd done about 7-8 months, and they said, you know, your contract's coming to an end. You know, do you want to stay on and do some more like on the side? And I said, yeah, I'll do a couple of hours here and there. But in the back of my head, I've had a number of projects I wanted to work on myself, and so I figured, you know, this is the perfect opportunity where I've, you know, still got some energy inside of me to try it. So music's one of them. I'm doing a couple of others as well.
Okay.
I'm writing a blog about it. It's blueskiesbegins.wordpress.com.
Okay.
And it sort of tells the story of how I'm going from just, you know, absolutely starting off with nothing really to do and try and get these projects going, and just to show people that, you know, you can do it if you really want to. Mm. So
presumably you went to university.
Yeah, I went to university. I graduated about 2 years ago now.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So this is the first time then pretty much that you've had nothing to do as such.
Yeah, exactly.
from coming out of education and going straight into work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So how long have you been performing and writing songs for?
Well, I started doing open mic nights when I started at Leeds University. I moved to America for a year, and I was playing in a bar there once every Friday night. Which sort of paid for rent and stuff.
Mm.
I've always been doing on the side, like open mic nights, done a few recordings here and there. But now I'm really just starting to, you know, sort of, what is it called? Like cold call all the bars and pubs in Cambridge and say, hey, give me a gig, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the blues band I'm in at the moment, they're really great guys. They're all talented musicians, Smoking Joes. And, you know, and so we're doing a big gigging as well on the side. We're doing St. John's Maybole tomorrow, which we're all very excited about. And hopefully it's going to be, big things from here on.
Okay, all right. So tell me the backstory then. You told me that you lived in Borneo for a while.
Yeah, that's right.
Working with orangutans. And you also lived in North Carolina. So in which way around did that happen, chronologically?
Yeah, so when I hear those things, it kind of sounds like I'm lying to you via email, doesn't it?
Give me exciting stories so that I would get you in on the show, and then you turn up and you tell me, actually, no, that's true.
I'm actually homeless, just looking for someone to sit for a couple of hours. I went to North Carolina as part of my degree,
right.
So that was a study year abroad, and then when I graduated, I moved straight out to Borneo to sort of do my, you know, dream job, as you call it, you know, sort of, you know, just give that a try, and it was great fun. But unfortunately, it doesn't really pay the bills, that sort of work, so moved back to England now.
Okay, so you've got quite a lot of life experience then. Even though you're 24, you've been around to various countries and to fend for yourself. And
well, that's actually my radio age. 24 is my radio age.
Okay.
Match age. Different.
But so do you put that sort of experience into your music?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I try and put everything into my music. Really, when I sit down and I write a song, I don't really think, right, I'm going to write a song about this. I just sort of let what comes, and I think it's all in there, whether it's the words or it's the feeling. You know, it's wherever any musician lives before they write a song, it always comes in there somewhere.
Okay, all right. Well, I've asked you to come and play some stuff for us. You can do a couple of tracks. You brought your guitar, so let's get you to do something for us first.
Okay.
What's it going to be?
This one's called "What Blues Really Means." I'm trying to get this one quite confident.
Okay.
Tonight, gonna look up and there find my answer so bright. Well, you won't ask me a question, well, I won't tell you no lie, but I ain't gonna promise you it's what you won't hear from me tonight. Oh, I'm going down to Chicago, go no. Yeah, I said I'm going down to Chicago. Take the blues away from me.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Why blues music? Why is that your passion as opposed to any other sort of genre?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. In the album I'm working on at the moment, that's really the only bluesy song in there.
Okay.
But I do very much like my blues. That's probably from my old guitar teacher, Matthew. He came over from the States, from Chicago. And I really wasn't finding my way with the guitar, let's say. It was just, I just sort of loved plucking the strings, but I couldn't make anything sound nice. And then suddenly he came along, he introduced me to Jimi Hendrix, B.B. King, Stevie Ray Vaughan. And suddenly everything started to fit for me. Not only blues, you know, other acoustic music, but there's something about the blues that's always just given me energy. So I'd probably say it came from my actual teacher, yeah.
Okay. And your experience of being in North Carolina, did that help you put some sort of that into your music? Are they into blues and a specific sort of music over in that part of America?
Yeah, they're into their country music. I'm a fan of country music. I can't write or perform country music myself, but me and some friends, we always went on road trips. One of my friends, Aaron Zipper, we always sort of went on road trips together. We went to Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
I went over to Chicago by myself. We went down to New Orleans for Mardi Gras, and I'd say Nashville, we heard some really good music. Chicago, you heard some amazing blues guitarists over there. So yeah, it really inspired me being there. And I mean, because I had a gig every Friday night, I'd always go there and try my new songs and have some fun with it. So yeah, I think being in the States helped me a lot.
What's the difference in terms of the way that people receive your music from America to this country? Is there a difference?
There is a big difference, because in the bar that I used to play at, sometimes we didn't have too much of an audience. So
right.
I remember one night, there was this homeless guy called John who always came in. He was a really cool guy, but he was really old, and sometimes, you know, after a few drinks, you go a bit mental. And I was performing one night, and it was literally just me and him in the bar. It was the most awkward gig of my life. It was about half a metre away from my microphone, just shouting, "Your name's John, my name's John." I'm playing, you know, a soft, sad song or something, you know. So there is a big difference in that way, I think.
Okay, but you must have had some audiences when you were playing over there.
I had some audiences. They like my stuff, but I think at that point I wasn't very confident in my own playing, so I'd be looking down at the floor a lot, you know.
Right.
So my music wasn't really coming out of me at that point, so I didn't get a huge response, and it wasn't that big a bar. But I think now that I'm playing this blues band and I'm starting to do some of my own stuff, I'm getting a bit of a response. I just love it, whether I'm playing in a small, you know, pub or, you know, a festival or anything. When people come up and they say, "I like that," or they say, "You could do better," or I love feedback in whatever form it comes, really. So that's why I'm appreciating more and more as time goes by.
Okay, how long have you been in Smokin' Joe's?
I think it's been about 6-7 months now.
Okay,
not too long.
Did you answer an advert? Are they looking for a lead guitarist? Or
yeah, well, kind of. I mean, it was a funny thing. I got to know the bassist, whose name is Ed, and we jammed a bit and had a lot of fun. And then one day he said to me, "Come to the Earl of Beaconsfield on a Sunday night, because they have a blues jam." He said, "You know, come down. There's this guy called Josh, who's a harp player. He's going to be singing as well, and he's looking for a guitarist. So why don't you come up and jam with us?" I went up there, and afterwards we had a talk. He said, "You know, I'm putting together a band." And so we all just met up. We got a keys player from an advertisement somewhere. He's a brilliant keys player. We've got a sax player as well. And it all just came together, really. And everyone got on really well, and the music sort of gelled, and we've just gone from strength to strength since, really.
We were saying off air that you played Strawberry Fair. What was that like?
Scary. It was pretty scary. That's the first time I've ever gigged with a band on like a stage.
Which stage did you play?
We just did the Saturday on the 12 o'clock, so like when the parade thing was coming in.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of energy, and it was probably one of the best gigs we've done. I even ended up trying to put the guitar behind my head. I don't know if it went well or not, but
can you play with it behind your head?
Well, I think that's for the audience to decide.
Okay. All right. Okay. So where can people see you on your own and with the band next, if they're not going to the May Ball tomorrow night?
Right. The next time I'm performing my solo stuff will be next Thursday at the Flying Pig at 10 p.m. As for Smokin' Joe's, we're being booked in for a lot of sort of birthday gigs at the moment, couple of bars and stuff. If you want to find out about what Smokin' Joe's is doing, just go to Smokin' Joe's. That's smokenjoes.co.uk.
Okay.
For my own stuff, that's that gig. You can find me on SoundCloud, Blue Skies JEM.
Okay, all right. Get to do one more song for us then.
Cool.
Thank you for coming in. What's this then?
This one's called "Never the Same Person Long Enough." It's much more of one that I'm trying to put together now, so it's not completely formed.
Okay.
I hope you're doing this.
Work in progress.
Work in progress. Okay. There you go. This is called "Never the Same Person Long Enough." I'm spinning in some kind of place where people like to party and smoke and blow. I know that it ain't for me, but tonight I just don't know who I am. So I feel like king of the world. Then I look down at my shoes and I see them tied like I always never like to do when I'm at home. You see me, you need me, I ain't gonna go from my window no more. You need me like I see you, don't think I don't need you no more. Reading a book on Sunday, sitting up on my tower where it's warm, cause it's near the sunshine that likes me. I don't mind if you can't see me from the floor. Clarity is something that you say always hides from you, but you know, give yourself 5 minutes under the spotlight and you'll see something you don't know. You need me, you see me, I ain't gonna go from my window no more. Yeah, you need me like I see you, don't think I don't need you no more. I tied your hair back for you, cause you were asleep, you didn't do it yourself. And you wanted to kiss me right there and then. Lord, no, I didn't say no. A mirror's a dangerous thing when you don't like to see your own eyes, cause you don't know what you're thinking. You don't know what hides behind that smile. You need me, you see me, I ain't gonna go from my window no more. Yeah, you need me like I see you, don't think I don't need you no more. You need me, you see me, I ain't gonna go from my window no more. Yeah, you need me like I see you, don't think I don't need you no more. But I'm never the same person long enough to know. No, I'm never the same person. Never the same person long enough to know. No, I'm never the same person long enough to know.
That's John Harper on Cambridge 105. Thanks again for coming in, John.
Thanks for having me.
Hope you enjoyed that.
Definitely.
And no doubt we'll hear your music again on Cambridge 105 in a couple of weeks' time on the New Music Generator Show. We'll play another track of yours. Cheers. So tomorrow, for the very first time, the National Rheumatoid Arthritis Society are holding a meeting in the Arbury Community Centre. It takes place between 3pm and 5pm, and we are joined by Jane from the Society. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Welcome to our lovely warm studio.
It is warm, isn't it?
Yes. So tell me, how did you get involved with the Rheumatoid Arthritis Society? I understand you're a volunteer.
Yes, I volunteer for them, and as a sort of local group coordinator, there's a few of us who've got together, and NRAS sort of leads it and has got us going, but it will be a patient-led group and we'll run it ourselves. So okay. We're happy for people to help or join us, you know, volunteering as well. And it's Cambridge's first group meeting tomorrow, okay. So we're looking forward to that.
So the society is a national thing?
National, yes.
So this is the first sort of Cambridge-based area. I guess this happens in other parts of the country. It's the first time Cambridge has got together as a group.
I think they've got over 40 throughout the country. Okay. Some have been going longer than us.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all of them have been going longer than us.
Yeah. Okay. So how did you get involved? Why did you decide to volunteer?
I first got in touch with them actually when I was struggling to get a drug that the consultant had wanted me to have. Because I was having problems with my rheumatoid arthritis being active. Mm-hmm. And they helped me then, and I just found them a really good source of excellent information, people to talk to, you know, on phone, people of similar age. There's all the drug information, everything's sort of very factual. And you can go at different levels as you like. And
yeah. Did you find out about them through research on the internet, or how did you know they existed?
This could have been before... The internet was okay. Really going, but they there was leaflets at the hospital,
yeah.
And I think probably somebody recommended they might be able to help.
Okay.
So they helped me with sort of wording a letter and what legally I was entitled to, what the NICE guidelines meant, and so that was helpful.
Okay, all right.
And I was able to have the drug prescribed for
right,
me
good.
From the hospital.
Brilliant. Okay. So tell me a bit about this event that's happening tomorrow. So it's the first time you're meeting, and presumably it'll be the first of many meetings.
We hope so. We've got two dates planned at the moment. The second one is Wednesday, the 21st of August, which is 3:30 to 5:30. Mm-hmm. They're both in Arbury Community Centre. And, you know, we'd love anyone with rheumatoid arthritis to come along with their partner or friend or whatever. Mm-hmm. We'll have coffee and I'm sure there'll be some chalky biscuits. My sister's making a cake.
Brilliant.
I have to remind her tonight to do that.
Yes, yes.
And just to chat, meet other people. And then we have Karen Mirison from the Occupational Therapy Department at Addenbrookes Hospital.
Okay.
She's coming to give us a talk about sort of equipment that can help protect our joints and increase independence, whether it be something to help you open the wine bottle or something a bit more sensible, like getting dressed or in the bath or opening cans, anything like that. So we're really looking forward to that. And each of the coordinators are going to bring along their most useful piece of equipment to show people. Mm. And there'll be, I guess, questions. We'll have a table set up with information about NRAS. You don't have to be a member. There's no charge. We just want to sort of increase the community in Cambridge of people with rheumatoid, so they've got somewhere they can ask questions.
Is it a chance for people to meet other people with rheumatoid arthritis and find out about their experiences as well?
Yes, and find out about different drugs you're on, what helps, and different ideas. Mm. But you know, you're talking to people that actually understand.
Yeah.
And the partners, again, they may be able to talk, you know, rheumatoid arthritis affects the whole family.
Mm.
You know, there's one patient, but it does affect, you know, everyone in the family.
Yeah, okay. What is the difference in layman's terms between arthritis and rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, rheumatoid arthritis is a very different disease to osteoarthritis, and they're often confused.
Mm.
People always used to say, oh, you're very young to have arthritis. They are saying it less nowadays. Don't know why. But rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune systemic disease where the person's immune system attacks the body's own healthy tissues. And it goes beyond swelling and stiffness and pain in joints, which sort of most people would see.
Mm.
But it affects the whole body, including internal organs such as the lung, heart, eyes. I mean, osteoarthritis is usually localised to a single joint.
Yeah.
And it's sort of part of the wear and tear process, you know, the skier's knees and tennis elbows and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. And you suffer from this yourself?
Yes, I got it at 21. I was sort of living and working in Australia and woke up one morning and I just felt very stiff. We'd had a party the night before, so...
Okay, so you put it down to that originally?
Well, yes, we were moving furniture, dancing. I think we had... we had plenty to drink as well, which you kind of do at that age.
Yeah.
But as it got worse, and then I, you know, went to see a doctor and then up to the Royal Melbourne Hospital and, you know, eventually came home.
Yeah, so the medication that you're on now helps you to lead a pretty normal life without any major problems, or...?
Well, it's sort of a normal life. It keeps me out of a wheelchair, you could say.
Yeah.
Makes it manageable. I try and always look at what I can do rather than what I can't.
Mm.
But yes, I do have to balance it. I have to pace myself. I sort of call it the Mars bar technique, work, rest and play.
Okay, all right.
And
are there different variations in rheumatoid arthritis? People can get it sort of more severely than others?
I think it's probably different for everybody.
Right.
It depends at what age they get it, how early they get treatment. And it's really important for people to go to the doctor and for the doctors to refer to the specialist, because that's when the great drugs that there are around at the moment, which is thanks to the sort of medical research in this country and, well, all over the world, can sort of really start to help them.
Okay. All right. So this event is taking place tomorrow. The first event is tomorrow between 3 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon at the Arbury Community Centre, which is on the corner of Campkin and Arbury Road. In Cambridge. If you want some more information about NRAS, as you call it, the National Rheumatoid Arthritis Society, I can understand why you'd abbreviate it, then there are some contact details people can get in touch.
Yes. The website is www.nras.org.uk, or you could telephone 0845 458 3969. Or just turn up tomorrow at the Arbury Community Centre. Like okay. I say, everyone's welcome. Mm-hmm. And please come and support us.
Okay. All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck with it. I hope it goes well. I'm sure
you'll
be...
Thank you very much.
It'll be well attended.
I hope so.
If there's any other events and things that you do in the future, want to promote any others, and come back and see us.
I'd love to.
Thank you very much, Jane. Cheers.
Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. It is 4:15, and I'm pleased to introduce my guests this afternoon. They are the Good Lovelies. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for coming in. Now, there's three of you all together. Caroline, Kerry and Sue. Now, which one's which?
I'm Caroline.
I'm Sue.
I'm Kerry.
Oh, no, you're not in order. How am I going to manage that? And you're in town because you're going to be playing at the Cambridge Union this afternoon. Well, this evening, I should say. What time are you going to be on?
We're on at 9:15, and there's an opening band. They're starting about 45 minutes before. They're called Tiger Blue.
Yes, we know them very well at this particular radio station.
Nice.
So, meeting some more friends, as it were, of 105 a little later on. Now, we're going to little chat, but also going to ask you to play some music, and I'm going to ask you to play something to start us off with. And what are you going to pick?
We're going to play a song called "Kiss Me in the Kitchen." All right.
Lots to do, but I'd have you instead. Kiss me in the kitchen and take me to bed. I think I love you. Grind me up coffee from your name. Put on a record, I'll shake a leg. Grind me up coffee from your name. I think I love you. When I hold you, don't let go. I am certain we'll do fine in our new home. Sweet pea, I've been told we'll enjoy growing old. Now I know I love you. Help me with my coat, take me out in the town. We can go anywhere, I'm all yours now. Help me with my coat, take me out in the town. I think I love you. Dance me out to dinner, dime me all night. Spin around the park and dip me in the moonlight. Dance me out to dinner, dime me all night. I think I love you. When I hold you, don't let go. I am certain we'll do fine in our new home. Sweet pea, I've been told we'll enjoy growing old. Now I know I love you. Kitchen and take me to bed. There's lots to do, but I would have you instead. Kiss me in the kitchen and take me to bed. I think I love you. Settle into dreamland. Wake up in my arms. Settle into dreamland. I think I love you. I think I love you. I know I love you.
Oh, I enjoyed that. Thank you very much. So, there's three of you, obviously, but I gather you started all as solo artists and then came together?
That's true. Yeah, it was about 6.5 years ago we got together to do a show as soloists. It was Christmas time, so we thought...
And this is in Toronto, is that
Toronto,
where you're from,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sang some songs together and it just clicked, and so we kept rolling with it.
The harmonies are very good and you clearly work together very well vocally. And I've often wondered about this as to whether or not, you know, people like you have just hit lucky. and there's three voices that sound very nice together? Or is there a certain amount of blending which goes on in the process?
It's definitely a bit of both. We got lucky that our voices fit together. It was so easy that, you know, when we went to try singing with other people in harmony afterwards, and realize it is harder with some people. That part we got lucky.
Is it also a bit of practice as well, I suppose?
A lifetime of singing in family bands like Caroline did, choirs. I did that my whole life, and that kind of stuff definitely
understanding
what it means.
Yeah. And we also spend a lot of time together, obviously, singing. That's the other part, the final part.
Absolutely.
Non-stop.
Practice makes perfect, as they say.
And also becomes intuitive after a while. Like, when we sing together, we play these games where one person will lead a melody and we'll just sort of try to follow, and you sort of get a sense of what that other person's going to do.
And it all sort of mixes together from there. And you're playing Cambridge tonight, Milton Keynes tomorrow, Grafton on the August the 30th, but that's not the Grafton Centre here in Cambridge. This turns out to be Grafton, Ontario.
Yeah, that was funny. Carrie and Sue actually grew up near Grafton, Ontario, in Coburg and Port Hope, Ontario.
And whereabouts is that for people like me who are geographically challenged and can't need to work it out
on
the map?
Southern Ontario.
Okay, so that's sort of down and
Lake
across
Ontario.
A bit.
Yeah, down across
a bit, about an hour.
Near one of the big lakes.
Okay, no, I've heard of that one. Do you enjoy traveling? Obviously, you've come over here, but do you have planned to go further afield on the tour as well?
Yeah. Well, you mean on this, like, in general?
Either this tour or maybe next year planning something?
Yeah, I mean, we've been traveling kind of nonstop for 4 years, and been to Australia, and of course coming to the UK always makes everybody in Toronto get all excited for us. Wow.
back home again.
That's right. So that's really fun. I love traveling. We have an added band member in our crew right now, an eight month old baby that belongs to Caroline, and she's really fun. So she makes traveling extra fun for me, because I get to be Auntie Carrie. For Caroline, I think it's different because she's got a bag full of nappies.
We're learning all the
so what happens? Does some poor promoter get to look after them whilst you're performing on stage?
Really, that's not far from the truth.
Little cradle up the corner, perhaps, of the stage to look after them.
We put the little pack and play in the corner, but yeah, we have done a few tours where there's like sort of every show we show up at, there's a babysitter. But in this tour, I'm really lucky because my husband's on tour with us.
So that's great.
He's playing Manny on this tour, which is lovely.
It's a very good experience to do that sort of thing. I'm just wondering, in terms of the audiences when you're travelling across, is it say like a UK audience different to a Canadian audience, different to an Australian audience in terms of how they react?
Not really.
Not for us.
Everybody likes the music.
Yeah.
Well, I think the people that come to see us, I think that is constant across the board, no matter where we are. I think if they want to have a good time with us, then our audience does. It's kind of fun.
It's also fun for us to learn about the local flavor. And, I mean, a big part of our show is there's a humor element. So we tell a lot of stories about being on the road. And when we're here in the UK, there are certain stories that resonate a little differently.
Not necessarily the music, it's the chat between the songs.
Well, sometimes, that is definitely an element of it. I mean, the first time we came to the UK, we have had a long-standing, what we call in North America, a no-pants policy.
Meaning, of course, we wear dresses on stage all the time.
What we meant, but not understanding that pants mean a different thing here.
You'll be familiar with Tom Jones, I guess.
Yeah.
He had this no pants issue as well, when women would throw them at him when he was on stage.
We're working up to that.
A slightly different no pants policy. Right, I'm determined to get a couple of songs in before 5 o'clock.
Sure.
So I'll ask you to do one more now, and with change of instruments here. Mm-hmm. Did you just swapped?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
So this one's called Tuesday Night. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anjou. I'm going to try and squeeze one more song in if we can. So there's a few quick words ahead of that. Now, Neil mentioned the guitar at the Neil Whiteside, for those who didn't catch which Neil has popped in. Now, that apparently, according to Neil, that's a well-known guitar, is it?
It's a lovely acoustic Martin Dreadnought that Sue got about 10 years ago that we have played all over the world.
It's a faithful. And yeah, then there's the banjo and mandolin.
Yeah.
I always have to be careful, otherwise you go hideously wrong. And how many instruments do you all play? You all do strings, or any of you do keyboards just in case?
On stage we have an electric bass, an electric guitar, and a stomp box and percussion kind of. So we switch between six instruments on stage.
Right.
To keep it interesting for us and the audience.
I guess, yeah, it's quite varied. I guess by the sense you all sort of vary who's taking the lead on a song, and sometimes it's all together just to mix it up a bit more.
Yeah, we all write songs and we all, like you said, we take lead vocals. It's really fun.
No, very much so. And if people are thinking, oh, I quite enjoy this, obviously they can come and see you at the Cambridge Union tonight,
yeah.
But they might also want to look online, perhaps, and buy some of your music. Where's the best place to look?
Everything, our website is just goodlovelies.com, and it's everything. It can be found there. We're on iTunes.
You have a sensible person who gives you no hyphens, no nothing, just goodlovelies.com.
And to clarify, it's love. Lies, so that there is an E in the middle there, not Lovelies.
Sorry, it's a southern English accent. It always sort of put those hard vowels in there. The Canadians make sound so nice and soft and lovely, with an I. One more. We better go into the news after that. But
sure.
What are we going to end with?
This is a little song from our first album. It's called Lie Down. It's a big barn burner sing along. If you want to join us, Julian,
do my best.
1, 2, 3. Lie down right here beside me, just for a minute. Slip your shoes off, hunker down, dear, beneath the covers, and close your eyes.
Little
23 minutes past five. It's time to welcome my next guest, Colin Rosensteel, who has been a councillor in Cambridge for the past 40 years. Good afternoon, Colin. Thanks for coming in. So how did it all start for you? What made you sort of want to go into politics in the first place?
I got involved as a student in talking to people who live in the area where I now live, actually, concerned about the future of streets like City Road. Where the plans had been up to that around that time, as it was for all terraced house areas, that they were all slums and they were all going to be knocked down, and people would be, as they feared, as they put it to me, shipped off to Arbury. That policy actually went into reverse at around that time. This would have been 1969, about 4 years before I was first a councillor, but it made a big impression on me that this was a community that deserved to be developed and not destroyed, as happened, for example, to the St Matthews area.
I know this is interesting because we were chatting. There's always a danger of chatting before we go on air, because you end up sort of dipping into areas and you feel people are missing out. But my understanding is this particular area at one point it might have been at that time there was you know, danger of the roads being knocked through, and there's a bypass coming through the city in this particular part of Cambridge as well.
The kite area was very much threatened with comprehensive development associated with shopping development. And the shopping development came a decade later, but most of the housing survived. At the time I first got involved, that wasn't at all the intention. It wasn't the way that things went in cities all over the country. And we had things like a surface car park on Prospect Row, which I was pleased when I was a councillor, the council redeveloped for a sheltered housing scheme that's about to get reopened, following its improvement. In fact, the open day is actually tomorrow. but it was the sort of engagement with the community. I supported a colleague, David Murray, who's left Cambridge now, who was elected as a councillor in the ward in 1970, and that was a breakthrough for the Liberals in those days. I knew that I was a determined Liberal. I'd been involved in the party in London, where I come from originally, since 1966, and that was my first direct involvement in government, in politics. I'd actually taken an interest in politics. I remember going to a meeting addressed by Harold Wilson in the 1964 general election with some friends from school who were Labour supporters. I wasn't, but it was still an interesting occasion to hear from.
It's interesting if you compare sort of Wilson's delivery, and Wilson in general, quite frankly, with the politicians, those particularly in Parliament at Westminster now. It's a different world, a different generation in all senses of the word, isn't it?
Well, the future of the world was at stake, literally, because the argument there was about the future of the British nuclear weapons. Harold Wilson promised to renegotiate the Nassau Agreement if he'd taken power. I don't suppose most of the listeners even remember what that agreement was, but it was the one that enabled this country to set up its submarine-based nuclear weapons. It didn't happen, of course, and that's another lesson one learned in politics, is that what politicians say on the stump during general elections is not necessarily what happens afterwards, and indeed that was an example.
So it's 1973, yeah. June 1973, and you're standing in Market for the first time, and I've got, because I notice you also do a fascinating website which gives the results of Cambridge local and county elections going back for goodness knows when. Very much a Labour there, but a Labour of works, I should emphasise. But you came second, but only just. You got 40.3% of the vote, whereas, mind you, you're coming second to one of your Liberal colleagues, Kathleen Keswick, who's got just 0.3%.
It was 9 votes more, was it? I seem to remember.
I'm sorry?
9 votes more, I think.
Votes more, yes. It's 1,061 to 1,070.
There were four seats in Market Ward in that election in that year, so there were four of us standing together and we all four got elected.
Sydney Foote and Lavina Hawes were the other Liberal, and it would have been Liberal Party candidates then, of course.
None of us had stood in an election before. Kathleen was actually the least known of all of us, but she cornered a segment of the electorate we'd not previously suspected the strength of, and that was the Catholic landlady vote in the city centre, which gave her the edge over those of us who'd been in the running for a week or two more than her before the election was called.
I noticed also, and you might turn around and tell me it's a completely different person here. Christopher Curry was there for Conservative.
Chris was indeed. It is the man from Acorn, yeah.
He had an early foray into politics.
That was his first foray into politics. He then stood for a party whose name I now forget in the general election in Cambridge in October 1974, I think. He'd by then left the Conservatives. And he was also more... I think he was working for Sinclair then, actually. It was in his time there. Yes, there are some extraordinary names linked with that election. One of the student electorate at Peterhouse was Michael Portillo, who claims to have voted Labour in one of his student elections. He was, of course, a Conservative at Peterhouse, and the one thing Peterhouse Tories in those days hated was Liberals. So since the Tories came third in that election, I can imagine he voted tactically for the Labour candidates, one of whom was actually a fellow of Peterhouse.
During the course of the 1997 election, a general election, I got on the bus with Michael Portillo. Or to be precise, I got on the bus and then Michael Portillo got on the bus, followed by a film crew, as you would if you were Michael Portillo. He was campaigning for the bus route in question, which was when he entered, I think, Kensington and Chelsea, I think, if I've got my dates right there. 1997.
I think that would have been right.
But over the years, obviously, Mr. Portillo's politics have perhaps changed a little bit. But how has local politics changed, do you feel? Have they changed at all, particularly in Cambridge?
I think the point about Michael Portillo, his politics didn't change, is that the application in this particular instance was different from what it might have been expected by the pundits. Yes, I mean, Cambridge... I was one of five Liberals elected in that election. There were my three colleagues in Market and one other in Coleridge Ward, who in an election that was a rainbow, she was top of the poll. There was a Labour candidate second, and two Tories. There were four elected in that ward on that day. But we were a small minority on the council. There were 11 Tories, and for the first time ever, a Labour majority. They had 26. It was an interesting time. The fact that all my colleagues were women gave me an interesting initial early approach to politics, and certainly we took some initiatives on making a more equal arrangement for the genders on the council, then which have stuck. My colleague Sydney Foote, who despite being called Sydney was female.
Really? Okay.
And she was also Australian, hence the Sydney, I think. But she was of an age where she didn't like being addressed as Miss any longer, and so We adopted the convention which has stayed to this day, that all councillors are councillor blogs, whatever their gender, unless they insist on having additional titles. We've had the occasional councillor doctor, for example. But we haven't had any councillor misses or or very few since that, in the 40 years since. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned briefly at the start of the interview the Grafton Centre, but I noticed you also were helping coordinate some of the work on the Grand Arcade when that came to be. And it strikes me as a little bit of a contradiction, really.
Well, when we came to power in 2000, the Liberal Democrats, then something that in 1973 I would never have imagined possible, to be perfectly honest. It shows how far we'd come. But, yeah, I was very much poacher-turned-gamekeeper. But to be fair, having spent 10 years of my life opposing the Grafton Centre, when it came to phases two and particularly three of that shopping centre, the reasons for opposing the development originally didn't really apply to those extensions. They were taking largely derelict areas, incorporating them into producing worthwhile additional facilities, particularly the cinema, and the BHS store were seen as substantial improvements of what was there before. And so we were not opposed to that. And we worked with the developers then. And interestingly enough, that experience of having worked with Grosvenor came to the city's aid when I was in charge of the Grand Arcade, because Grosvenor's were brought on hand to sort out a project management problem with Grand Arcade, which enabled it to be delivered. And we knew from their track record of project managing difficult developments in the Kite that what they could do and we were very much on the same side by then, and delivered something I think the people of Cambridge wanted. I think the key issue about Grand Arcade was keeping Robert Sales, John Lewis's, in the centre of Cambridge.
Yes.
And I don't think there's anybody in Cambridge who seriously didn't think that was a good idea.
No, a particular member of my family would be more than happy just to move into the store. It'd be absolutely fine after that. Do you think that the balance is right, though, between developers and, shall we say, the views of the general public? You know, you'll be familiar, of course, with Wilton Terrace just
yeah,
recently.
Yeah.
And there's other things always seem to be popping up at one time or another.
Wilton Terrace is a bit of a car crash, which I've managed to be not involved in at all. Because basically the principle of development was accepted as part of a much bigger development in which the case for that particular bit was not really seriously considered, unfortunately, and it then made it very difficult to go back on that at a later stage.
You think it could have been handled better by the council and even by the developers?
Well, to be fair,
the
council acted on the responses it got from the public then, and they were very muted then compared to what they've been more recently.
Mm. Maybe the campaigners got it wrong. They didn't move in quick enough themselves to wave the flag about what was going to happen.
It wouldn't be the first time in Cambridge that people have seen too late the case for particular buildings as part of a larger. Mm.
And does that go back to like a lack of understanding of the process, or maybe people like me not reading through a list of planning applications every week or something like that?
The trouble is, these are not listed buildings, so the strength of the case for them was fairly limited anyway, and the benefits from the station development are on a rather grander scale, to do with getting a new station square, getting 3,000 cycle parking spaces, for example, and some of those benefits do require some major development to fund them, and one can't get away from that, unfortunately. I think the argument in the kite was not against the principle of development, it's simply about the overwhelming clean sweep approach to development, and I always see as the example of what could have been done in the kite was what was done to the tram depot and the tram shed, the corner of East Road and Dover Street, where you got what was seriously derelict stable building from the old tramway company that had been not used for that purpose since 100 years ago now, but had been used for furniture storage, I think, and was let to go derelict. And yet they managed to, within the existing footprint and to some extent and with new building completely on the corner of the Stroud and Dover Street, to get worthwhile new development, the pub and the office and the two office buildings.
Yeah.
There, which shows what could have been done on perhaps in some other places in the kite, but you know, we have the Grafton now. The problem is not with the scale, for example, the entrance on Fitzroy Street and Burley Street Junction, which is very sensitively done, but just the size of the obstacle it puts in the community between the north and the south sides of the kite. There's to some extent cut off now.
So 40 years on, you're going to head up to 50 years as well?
I don't think I'm going to get quite that far. My present term ends next year, so I shall certainly get to 41 years. But
in the hands of the electorate, I guess.
After that, the electorate will be.
I'm still
a young man. It's
It's kind of my point, really. You started.
I'm still below state now. Retirement age.
Precisely.
I think I've still got some more to do. We're moving house within the ward quite shortly, and so I'll be seeing from on the ground things from a slightly different point of view in King Street compared to where we are in the
car. A few new perspectives, perhaps.
Slightly, yes. But I'm still involved in Park Street School, which my children went to, although I first became a governor a year after I became a councillor, when I didn't have a wife, let alone children, let alone send them to school.
Interesting perspective there.
And now my granddaughter is there.
Oh, fantastic. Well, look, Colin, thank you very much for coming into Cambridge 105 this afternoon. And, I guess not necessarily for the next 40 years, but at least for the next four or so, through the next election, perhaps. Good luck. Thanks.
Well, I've still got something to give. I hope to be able to do so.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
So time to welcome Anna Lindsay back to Cambridge 105. She is, of course, one of the organisers of the PACT, Petersfield Area Community Trust summer event that takes place tomorrow. Hello, Anna.
Hello, Julian. And yes, it does.
Good to have you back. Thank you very much for coming in on this. At the moment, it's sunny afternoon, but you know, I could say damp afternoon, give it another 5 minutes. You never know quite what's going to happen. So, these lists of prizes, then. It's quite a long list, really. How did you manage to get hold of them all?
Local businesses have been incredibly generous. I mean, this is just a selection. I mean, these are just the charity auction prizes. Then there are hundreds of other prizes which we're putting into the tombola. So meals for two, meals for four, manicures, bicycle services,
watches. Oh, I always need bicycle service. There's always something going on with my bicycle.
Well, there you are. Come and buy a tombola ticket and see if you can win that particular tombola prize.
Actually, I rather fancy the ukulele in the blind auction.
Well, at least with the blind, I mean, with the tombola, it's, you know, the luck of the draw. You have a 1 in 5 chance of winning something, and the prizes are amazing, but you can't aim for, you know, which specific prize you'd like. But with the charity auction, of course, you can make sure that you get what you're looking for. So if the ukulele is what takes your fancy, get bidding on it.
You see, really what I should have done is not mentioned it at all, because now I'm attracting people's interest in the ukulele, thus therefore putting the price up. So this could be a bit of a bad move on my part. So when does it all get underway tomorrow afternoon?
Well, the summer event itself starts at midday tomorrow and finishes at 5. The auction is already live because that carries on until our AGM at the start of July. But the summer event tomorrow starts at midday, and it starts off with the lion dance, Chinese lion dance.
That's at midday, I think.
Yes, that's right. So when we originally did the schedule, they were going to lead the carnival parade, which is the grand finale of the whole event. But in fact, we've decided that it would be better to have them opening the event with literally a drum roll. And then we have the samba group heading the carnival parade at the end.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. Just on the silent auction, you say it's live now. So
yes.
how do people place their bids for
people can go online.
Gallon of cider?
They can. There's two ways. Basically, they can either go online to the PACT website. That's www.pactcambridge, all one word, .org, so pactcambridge.org, and send us an email there, contact us via the website, or they can send an email directly to auctions@pactcambridge.org, or they can come along tomorrow and bid in writing, or they can drop it off at 168 York Street, Cambridge. So there are a variety of ways that they can start bidding already.
Okay, now I know over the last few weeks, the last time you came in, you were talking about the workshops which were taking place, I think, on Saturday and Sunday over the couple of weeks.
That's right, two weekends, and we've been making all sorts of carnival costumes.
That was jewellery, by the way.
It's another
little shake. Thank you.
It's all sorts of things that people can wear and use for the carnival parade. The theme for the carnival parade, for the costumes at least, is the Packed Millennium Garden, which is on the corner of Norfolk Street and St Matthew Street. So it was anything which has anything to do with that. So it could be flowers or birds and bees or architectural details like the arches or things drawn from the mosaics, because this is too beautiful.
It's got a distinctive area on the corner there, isn't it?
It's just a very distinctive area.
Cherry trees is what I was searching for.
So diagonally opposite cherry trees, next to the dentist,
yep.
And it's a lovely little public garden which PACT was actually responsible for creating. So when the theme for the carnival parade was being voted on, that got the most votes.
Well, works for me. Now, Petersfield itself stretches for quite an area around Cambridge,
it does,
doesn't it?
Yes. But people tend to assume that it's just Petersfield itself, which is that tiny little
the church,
area,
of course, or Jimmy's.
Next to Jimmy's. But in fact, the Petersfield area stretches from Mill Road to Coldham's Lane, and bounded the other side from by the railway line and East Road, Newmarket Road. So it is a large chunk of central Cambridge. And, of course, it means that we have this incredible variety and richness.
It's got a catchment area, isn't it?
It is. It's fantastic. So, for example, we've got lots of artists in this area. This year, for the first time, we're having an artist gallery as part of the summer event. One day only. If you don't come along, you've missed it. So another reason to come along to the summer event.
No, definitely so. And the actual summer event itself, that's obviously not across the whole of Petersfield? What is, if you like, the boundaries for the event? It's Norfolk Street, obviously, but...
Yes, that's a good question. Basically, it's within Norfolk Street, so we're closing off Norfolk Street from the Man on the Moon to East Road to traffic, and using the sort of green spaces on either side of it and the sort of courtyard area of the Squeaky Gate. It sounds like a relatively small area, but we're cramming in and packing in a huge amount of diverse elements. So you can do everything from learn to hip-hop dance and cheerlead and disco dance to learning some tango. You can have live music, live jazz with the Andy Bowie Band. You can listen to Squeaky Gate or Chip's Indoor Performance or Ellis and Connolly. So if you
listen to Squeaky, they just open and close it, aren't they?
No, they're a group. I think they're going to be performing with a band. Okay. There's a choir, City of David Choir. Well, two choirs, actually. There's the St. Matthew's Primary School Choir. There's the Coton Morris Men. There's belly dancing. There's feel free dance. There's samba band. As I said, they're going to be doing not just a workshop, but also participating in the carnival parade. There's sports. So you can do everything from elite sports to kickboxing and a community circus workshop. Skateboarding exhibition, there's a hula hooping workshop, there's the British Science Association with hands-on experiments for you to come along and enjoy.
This is a packed programme that you've put together. How long is it going on for?
Just 5 hours.
I was expecting it to be on for a couple of weeks at least with all that. That's pretty good. That's a really good, so it's a pretty good afternoon for people to spend. They can also hopefully hear a little bit about it on Cambridge 105. Carrie Littlechild is going down there for us. She's going to be having a little look, see what's going on.
We're looking forward to seeing her.
So that's on Cambridge 105 between 3 and 5 o'clock as part of the Summer Saturday programme. But the key fact, this starts with your Chinese dance. And where are they leaving from?
They're leaving from, I think we've decided that they're leaving from the Man on the Moon and then going up and down Norfolk Street. But you'll hear them. I mean, follow the sound and the celebration and the crowds. And of course, everything else kicks off at 12 as well. And there are a number of things undercover, so should the weather decide to be unfriendly, and I'm praying for blue skies and sunshine and just the slightest breeze, but if my prayers aren't heard, then there are things undercover. There's things in the marquee, there's things in the community room of the Man on the Moon, there's things in lots of gazebos, very large gazebos, and of course there's the art gallery in the Squeaky Gate community room next to the Box Cafe.
So it won't be sub-aqua hula hooping, they'll just be moved.
Exactly. The hula hooping is undercover anyway, and sort of visitors and participants can enjoy it from undercover should the weather prove inclement. But as I said, I am praying for blue skies and sunshine.
Sounds good. Are you going, Zoe?
I can't tomorrow. I'm working all day tomorrow. But I'll have a look at the silent auction.
Yeah, good decision.
Absolutely, because that's...
I just interrupted. I'm also interested in the ukulele.
We outbid each other. That's the problem solved, Ben. The price of the ukulele is just...
You shouldn't have mentioned it. You're right.
And it's a bad move. Anna, thank you very much. Good to see you. I hope it all goes well tomorrow.
Thanks for having me, and look forward to seeing you and all of the listeners tomorrow afternoon. It should be an absolutely fabulous afternoon. I mean, we haven't talked about half the things that are there, so just come along and explore for yourself.
Certainly plenty to see. Thanks for coming in, Anna. Thank you.